WBEZ is supported by RRF Foundation for Aging. Let's talk about ageism awareness. Did you know one of the many forms of ageism is internalized ageism? In fact, negative self-perceptions of aging decreases quality of life and can shorten our lifespan by more than 7 years. Let's recognize and call out ageism whenever and wherever it shows up. Check out rrf.org/news to learn more. That's rrf.org/news.
The shooting happened during a traffic stop in Franklin Park, where an ICE officer says he was dragged by the car, but he wasn't wearing a body camera.
ICE is not supposed to be conducting traffic stops. They created their own false narrative of what happened. It's everywhere.
More than 100 protesters clashed with immigration and customs enforcement agents in Broadview.
And they started peppering us with rubber bullets, with pepper balls, just taking pot shots and laughing as they did it.
Hey, Chicago. This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons.
Chicago's Corporation Council is proposing a $90 million settlement to end 176 lawsuits against the city.
The liability of the city, from my perspective, was clear.
Pritzker is ordering that agencies under his watch set aside up to 4% of their budgets.
Donald Trump and the big ugly bill.
He's blaming President Donald Trump for economic uncertainty here in Illinois.
Those are some of the biggest headlines in the Chicago area this week. Every Friday, we bring you up to speed and give you analysis of the stories affecting our region in our weekly news recap. One of our guests this week, Sun-Times reporter and editor Tom Shuba. And before we get into the full conversation that you just clicked on, Tom Shuba is here in the studio. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Sasha. How are you?
Doing well. You know, you just did a deep dive, and I'm so glad you stopped by because this story is pretty darn interesting. It's on our homepage right now, suntimes.com. Tell us what we should know about this politically connected prison company that's now basically hiring staff to support Trump's deportation campaign here.
Yeah, so there's this company called CoreCivic from Tennessee, pretty controversial, one of the biggest private prison firms in the nation. Mm-hmm. They've faced a Justice Department investigation. They've faced troubling lawsuits. And now, as Donald Trump is ramping up immigration enforcement efforts in Chicago, they're staffing up to support ICE.
Something about that doesn't feel good.
I think it's probably part of everything that we're seeing that's been so disorienting, right? This flood of agents coming, running around and taking people into custody, arresting people in Chicago and the suburbs. Yesterday we saw the Border Patrol riding on boats down the Chicago River.
Right.
And, you know, it's been tough for people in Chicago to wrap our heads around. And on top of that, now we have, this somewhat controversial company coming here and staffing up to assist these efforts.
It's like this immigration story here, just it cannot get any worse. But while you're here, Tom, any other big stories that are on your radar?
Yeah. My colleague Frank Main published a story today. We had done a lot of reporting about these devices that people call switches. They're little thimble size devices that go on the back of handguns, typically Glocks, and they turn them into machine guns. They're very scary. When we first reported on this, we watched videos that the ATF had of them test firing them, and it's really jarring because they can just spew out bullets rapid fire. And so the new state's attorney in Cook County, Eileen O'Neill Burke, made it a big priority to go after these very hard. Mm. And so what Frank found through, going through data was that essentially they are pushing for detention to hold people in jail if they are caught with weapons that are machine guns or converted into machine guns.
Mm, so some enforcement finally happening on this.
Yeah, but still, there is some criticism, and that comes from the public defender's office, who say, you know, these are essentially gun cases, and they may be going a little too far. They may be going too aggressive with this.
Mm. Well, two very interesting stories to check out at suntimes.com. Thank you so much for stopping by, Tom.
Thank you, Sasha.
That's Sun-Times reporter and editor Tom Shuba. I also talked with Axios Chicago reporter Carrie Shepard and WTTW Chicago politics reporter Heather Sharon. So let's get into our weekly news recap with the full panel. All All right, it's been just over 2 weeks since the federal immigration enforcement started to show up in full force here in our city. And the Department of Homeland Security says they've arrested 550 people in the Chicago area so far this month. Tom, the Sun-Times, though, they're reporting that the number is actually hard to verify. So what's the story there, and how are they coming up with this 550?
You know, I think that was a number first reported to the Associated Press, and it was a number. DHS and ICE have been doing is, like, slowly trickling out press releases and tweets saying, we've caught the worst of the worst, and it's limited information that they're releasing, names of people, things that they say they've been charged with or convicted of. And, it's not a comprehensive list. And the Department of Homeland Security did acknowledge, too, that, like, you know, all these people that they are arresting, this over 500 people that they've reported, all of them don't have criminal records. Actually, right. A lot of them don't.
Right. And some were U.S. citizens, were they not?
Yeah, we've had a handful of reports of people detained who are, United States citizens during these raids. One, you know, last week when Kristi Noem came to town and it was suburban raid in Elgin and this man's detained.
Yeah.
Turns out he's a citizen.
And Heather, ICE agents arrived somewhere new yesterday. What were they doing on the Chicago River?
Well, they were going up and down the river, pretty much between the Loop and River North. And they appeared to be armed with military-style weapons. I think we all expected those images to appear on social media feeds as sort of an indication of the militarized nature of these sort of raids.
Yeah.
But let's be clear, they were not like pulling up along the Riverwalk and hauling people away. But, we heard a little bit from Mayor Brandon Johnson yesterday about this, saying that this is another indication that these raids are designed to terrorize the people of Chicago.
Yeah.
And there's really no other way, I think, to think about these. Because there's obviously no immigration enforcement reason to be on the Chicago
on the river.
River.
Yeah, and federal officials are saying, you know, the boats were needed as part of this anti-immigration blitz. But at least one alderperson is saying this is just a photo op.
Right. And it's very similar to what we saw in Los Angeles, where where Gregory Bovino, of the head of the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, sort of used a sort of a phalanx of troops to clear MacArthur Park as sort of a show of force. I think that city officials have been bracing for this kind of event for a while, and nobody is really quite sure what to make of it.
Mm. We've seen a surge of protests out and around the Broadview Detention Center in the western suburbs. And last Friday, federal agents used chemical agents like pepper balls and tear gas canisters to disperse protesters outside the ICE facility. Remind us what happened, Tom. And I'm hearing it might still be happening, the pepper balls and the tear gas, today even.
Yeah, that's what my colleague Mohammed Samra is reporting, who was on the ground this morning. And, you know, last Friday, though, was really the biggest escalation there at Broadview, which has kind of become this kind of epicenter for resistance to this, what the Trump administration is calling a blitz on immigration in the Chicago area. You know, last Friday we had a handful of congressional candidates show up there and, you know, kind of be part of the crowd that was, pushing back against federal officials there, and then who were kind of in the fray when, things got violent and, it was really troubling escalation. Protesters are trying to essentially block vehicles coming in and out of this processing facility for detainees, and federal law enforcement officials are pushing them, and then they're starting to shoot them with munitions using chemical agents to try to disperse the crowds.
Right.
And, you know, there's these, you know.
They've since erected a fence too, right? There's a fence around the facility.
They've erected a fence. The city of Broadview, it's, you know, goes into the street, into the roadway.
Illegal, Broadview says, right?
Yeah, they want this taken down.
Essentially says this is, you know, could be a real issue if we've got to get by here to, you know, respond to an emergency. I asked my colleague Mohammed this morning, I said, is the fence still up there? He goes, The fence is still there. So it's been a few days since this kind of order came down from the village, like, get rid of this thing. And the feds don't seem to be heeding that call.
Carrie, several politicians, mostly Democrats, have been making appearances at the Broadview Detention Center. What's been happening?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's been a lot of 9th District candidates, which actually doesn't cover Broadview. Broadview falls under the 7th Congressional District, which is obviously Danny Davis's seat. Daniel Biss, who's the mayor of Evanston, was there. Kat Abduzallah is another candidate that we've seen a lot of. Actually, there was quite an alarming video of her where she was sort of thrown down by an ICE officer. That was, you know, there's a few others that have been there. But then the Trib reported that a Republican has since shown up. This is, forgive me, I forget his name. He is, so someone knows, you can jump on it and tell me.
We're all trying to find his
Republican
name right
candidate,
now.
Oh, for candidate for Governor Ted Dabrowski. Yes, he's a candidate. I know we hear
Sorry,
a lot about
Ted.
I hear a lot about Darren Bailey, but there's also him. And, you know, interestingly enough, this actually even sort of for a moment pitted Dem against Dem in the sense that the Broadview mayor sort of spoke out against Mayor Daniel Biss, who's running for Congress, and saying this is causing disruption, this is causing disorder, even more so than there already is. Yeah. He says, of course, this is the right thing to do. This is how we need to confront this. Even if, you know, I wasn't running for office, this is appropriate response from the community.
Right.
So that will, and as, you know, Tom is saying, everyone's saying, my colleague Monica Ang is there this morning. She sent a video. They are continuing to
still
tear
continuing.
Gas.
Any sense of how long these demonstrations are going to continue for?
I suppose as long as they're there, right? As long as the ICE agents are there. I mean, it's interesting, right? Like Heather is saying about on the boats, there's this performative quality. That's not what's happening at Broadview, I would say. But, you know, like, who are you pulling over on the boat? The architecture, you know, crews, like, it's an odd, and that's something we heard from, honestly, that's something we thought and talked a lot about if the National Guard came, is where are they going to go?
Right.
Are they going to go into the neighborhoods that they call the quote unquote hellhole, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to go down Michigan Avenue so they can be seen? And that's something that our colleagues in D.C. said was happening a lot with the National Guard there.
And you did a deep dive, Tom. This was into the private prison company that's actually benefiting from Trump's aggressive immigration enforcement. Tell us more about this Tennessee-based company, CoreCivic.
Yeah. So, you know, as we've been kind of just like poking around, trying to understand how this is all expanding and ramping up in the Chicago area, we found that this company, CoreCivic, which along with another company called Geo Group, is really like, they're these huge private prison contractors and they really benefit from contracts with ICE. And in this case, we have CoreCivic hiring what they're calling case processing specialists for the Chicago area, including at Broadview, to essentially like pull the criminal records of detainees, help facilitate deportation proceedings, even book deportation flights. So even though we have this just incredibly massive influx of funding for ICE under the One Big Beautiful Bill, as Trump called it, they still are apparently needing to hire contractors to help them just process these folks and you know, either get them deported or I'm sure get them moved to different jails outside of Chicago where immigration detainees are held as well. So
interesting. Just, interesting find there. President Trump continues to disparage Chicago in the meantime. He's suggesting once again that National Guard troops could help reduce crime. Here he is talking at Charlie Kirk's memorial service.
One of the last things he said to me is, please, sir, save Chicago. We're going to do that. We're going to save Chicago from horrible crime. We're going to have Charlie very much in mind when we go into Chicago, and we'll get that one straightened out. You have an incompetent governor who he thinks it's okay when 11 people get murdered over the weekend.
Heather, has Mayor Johnson responded to this?
I mean, this is not anything we haven't heard literally for the past 3 months. And I think that it's become a little bit sort of background noise in a way. Oh, the president's threatening to deploy military troops on the streets of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, and I think it's been, I think, a difficult story to cover as a reporter because there was a whole sort of flurry of national coverage about how, oh, Pritzker and Johnson like stood up to Johnson and the president backed down by not sending the National Guard. You know, that I think misses the amount of fear and terror and worry that is currently existing in immigrant communities in Chicago, like Pilsen and Little Village.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, the president did not need to send the National Guard to sort of create the fear and chaos that he wanted to. If you drive down 26th Street, if you sort of go to any of sort of the, you know, sort of immigrant heavy commercial areas.
Mexican Independence Day.
Right. Yeah. They are much less active and vibrant than they are because people are concerned that if they go out, they are not going to make it back home. So, the federal agents are here.
Yeah.
Like they are here, and there's no indication that there's been any reduction in crime. Crime is already down significantly. It was the safest summer despite bursts of violence in decades. And I think that we have to not think about this as something that the president could do, but something that the president has already done.
Yeah, is doing. Your thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, I was going to say, unlike, you know, ICE or CBP, which have law enforcement functions, and we're seeing ICE, for example, making traffic stops. We saw fatal shooting during a traffic stop of an immigrant. The National Guard can't carry out law enforcement duties, right? They were sent to L.A. They wound up, you know, guarding essentially federal property. In D.C., they were doing what kind of amounted to scarecrow policing around monuments. So, yeah, I think Heather is right here. You know, all of this discussion about could the troops come to Chicago misses the point of, you know, we have essentially a militarized police force here fanning out and doing, you know, making tactical arrests day after day after day after day, where we have little accountability or knowledge of what they're actually doing, because it's kind of like, they're ghosts.
The president seems really intent on wanting to be wanted. I don't know if, like, he keeps saying that, and I think we should be clear, I don't think Governor Pritzker is saying he doesn't care, or Mayor Johnson is saying he doesn't care when somebody is shot. I don't think we as the media, when we report that crime is down, we're pretending that it's not still a problem in the city and that any murder is a murder. But, I mean, he keeps wanting the governor to invite him. Yeah. And as Heather says, as a reporter, you're sort of like, forward, back. It's this tangling of like, is he going to come? Is he going to come? Or is he going
to? I mean, listen to how he framed it in the in Charlie Kirk's memorial service.
Right.
Know, Charlie wanted me to come.
He's from Arlington Heights. Yes, exactly. So. Exactly.
Also, and well, there's a legal reason for that, because right now, as things stand, there is no unrest on the streets of Chicago. There is no even, you know, any event that would even provide a pretext for the president to deploy the National Guard.
Exactly.
Which means that the only way that the president could legally deploy the National Guard or federalize the Illinois National Guard would be at the invitation of the governor. That's what happened in 2020 when the George Floyd protests erupted.
Yeah.
That is what has happened in the 60s. So Governor Pritzker has been asked time and time and time again, you know, are you going to call? Are you going to ask for help with quote unquote crime? And he has said repeatedly, if I do that, that will be a legal pretext to sort of take over Chicago. And I think it's really important that we're clear that that's what that dynamic is setting up by the president.
Let's quickly touch on a couple more immigration stories here. Hundreds of people gathered at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in West Suburban Melrose Park on Wednesday. They were honoring 38-year-old Silverio Villegas Gonzalez. And now Villegas Gonzalez, of course, was fatally shot by an ICE agent during a September 12th traffic stop. You obtained Franklin Park police body cam video, Tom. This video comes from right after the shooting. Quickly tell us what it shows.
Well, it shows officers showing up and these two ICE agents rendering aid to Silverio as he's dying. And essentially, one of them tries to justify the shooting by saying, yeah, he tried to run us over. We see that the other agent, who we understand was the officer who fired the fatal shot, you know, his pants were ripped. He seemed to have a bloodied knee. They described some injuries over police radio, but the officer said this was nothing major, the injuries. And that breaks from what the DHS quickly reported, which was that this officer was seriously injured,
right,
that he was dragged behind a car. And so, you know, that's kind of what we really focused on in reviewing this, is trying to look at the aftermath of this to see if it lines up with what was reported.
Yeah. Who's investigating the shooting?
That's unclear.
That is a very good question.
FBI is supposed to be, right?
Franklin Park told us that it was the FBI. The FBI doesn't confirm or deny investigations. So we really don't know. I mean, there is a system prescribed, you know, for ICE for fatal use of force, to, for how they have to go about internally reviewing it. But, it's really not clear. And who knows if we'll ever get that answer. Mm-hmm.
What's also, I mean, that video makes it's even more sort of alarming, maybe a little hyperbolic, but like, you know, the video shows a Franklin Park police officer talking to, who I think it's his superior, right? And his superior is like, you can't investigate this. This is a federal shooting. You can't investigate this. So it leaves us a little like, oh, so there is no, who does investigate this? Yes, the FBI is supposed to be, but it's, you know, it leaves also those local police jurisdictions, which, you know,
yeah,
in this weird, strange bind of like, well, who are we supposed to be talking to right now after? Mm-hmm.
And that is a really kind of interesting moment, because you see these ICE officers kind of walk off from where they were initially kind of, you know, recounting what happened and their injuries. And one of the cops on the scene says to his boss, like, well, what's going on? Who's investigating this? You know, essentially asking, like, is this the state police? Because the state police will investigate.
So even then they were wondering, whose is this?
There was, it's like, this is out of the norm for them. And
oh, boy. I want to move on to a couple of zoning and development issues that city council dealt with.
Yes.
So alders are considering a plan that could ease displacement in neighborhoods around the Obama Presidential Center, like Woodlawn, like South Shore. What's being proposed and what do critics say?
Well, it passed yesterday. It's done.
All right.
So the rents and the housing prices around the still under construction Obama Presidential Center have skyrocketed because people want to be close to what is going to be a major attraction. That has meant that some longtime residents who have lived in parts of Woodlawn and South Shore have been really struggling to stay in their homes and in their neighborhoods. And this measure, crafted by Alderman Desmond Yancey, is designed to sort of increase the supply of affordable housing and to create a way to give longtime homeowners a break on their rising property taxes.
Yeah.
So much of these protections were already in place in Woodlawn and have been since 2020 because it had the support of that ward's alderperson, Jeanette Taylor. The protections were sort of excluded from parts of South Shore because both the fifth ward alderman before Alderman Yancey and the current seventh ward alderman, Greg Mitchell, opposed those protections.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, Alderman Yancey has spent the last 2.5 years, give or take, trying to sort of expand these protections to all of South Shore. But Alderman Mitchell refused.
Yeah.
And under the wonderful derogatory tradition of aldermanic prerogative, you can't do that without the alderperson's support. So essentially, they said, okay, we'll just do it for the fifth ward, and that's what passed through the city council yesterday.
All right. Well, one more story before we take a pause here. City council finally reached a compromise on the ongoing saga of so-called accessory dwelling units. I just like to call them granny flats. Tell us about that, Heather.
Well, this would allow property owners to create a separate unit on their property, either a coach house or an attic unit or a basement unit, so that they could either rent it out or they could have a family member come and live with them in sort of their own separate space. Now, these units had been banned for 68 years in Chicago, and there was a pilot program in 2021 that tested it in 5 parts of the city, represented by progressive alder people. The city said, well, this just worked like gangbusters to create sort of new affordable units in ways that really sort of kept people in their neighborhoods and helped mm-hmm. them pay for those escalating property taxes and, you know, stay afloat. Originally, the proposal would have sort of made them legal everywhere in the city. But again, certain alder people in certain wards said that they were concerned that this would sort of create a explosion of density in single family, you know, neighborhoods. And so the law that passed yesterday, unanimously, by the way, will give alder people the final say over whether these units are permitted in their wards. So you can sort of, you know, the cliche is that there's only one map of Chicago. So you can expect these units to only be built in neighborhoods like Logan Square and Humboldt Park and, you know, neighborhoods where they have elected progressive representatives to the city council, whereas in neighborhoods like Mount Greenwood and Edison Park, you're going to see those units continue to be prohibited in sort of the structure that has helped to, as the federal government under President Joe Biden found, sort of perpetuates gentrification.
Okay, Carrie, let's turn to Springfield, where Governor Pritzker is directing state agency heads. He's saying, set aside 4% of your annual budget, folks. Why? Why is he doing that?
Well, because he is saying what he's continued to say, that because of federal cuts, the state's in trouble. The state passed a $55 billion budget in July, the highest in state history, Republicans like to point out. And so the governor is asking basically departments to tighten their belts because they need to, as many, you know, schools have talked about, even higher education is worried about, of because of the federal cuts and what that's going to mean as, you know, we continue on. Yes, as he notes, the big ugly bill, which is, of course, is President Trump's big, beautiful bill. So he is asking these departments to take a look and possibly, you know, the governor will say, I cut immigrant health care. There were cuts that were made in the budget and quote unquote tough choices. But we'll have to see in the next 30 days is what department these heads have a month to, you know, try and shave 4% off. And so we'll see before October when they're back in session what's going to happen.
And Heather, I know you're a city government gal, but you've seen many a budgets.
I have.
4%. How significant is that?
I mean, it is not insignificant, especially because we have gone over the COVID fiscal cliff. There is not a lot of, as people like to say, fat left to cut from budgets. And it will mean that we are approaching are we cutting services? Are we raising taxes? There is not really a rocket science here. You either spend less, take in more money, or borrow. And the governor is saying we really can't raise any more revenue and there's not really a way to borrow additional money, so it has to be cuts. And really the question will be, as we go into budget season after the first of the year for the state, what that looks like in terms of services.
All right, Tom, Justice Department Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon was here in Chicago on Monday. This was for a court case involving Illinois' assault weapons ban. Details.
Yeah, so Harmeet Dhillon came and argued before an appellate panel about essentially there's an appeal to a ruling by a district court judge that said that this, you know, signature initiative of Governor J.B. Pritzker passed in the wake of the Highland Park massacre to ban the sale of assault-style weapons, for the most part, in Illinois, was unconstitutional. And it was an interesting exchange. She didn't spend much time talking to the panel, but there was kind of a back and forth where she was challenged whether she was accepting past ruling in the district court. And she said no, because what she was referring to was a Supreme Court ruling that essentially found that gun laws and the constitutionality of gun laws should be reviewed in the historical context of the United States of America, a ruling that has caused great confusion across courts, across the nation. So it was kind of an interesting, testy little exchange and really notable and remarkable because, you know, we have this high-ranking DOJ official kind of butting in here. And, you know, this is also a case that, you know, or challenges to this law probably will wind their way up to the Supreme Court.
I wonder how much it cost to fly her in for, I think John Seidel said 1.5 sentences she spoke or something.
She spoke 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, it was 5 minutes out of like hours.
Okay.
It was 1.5 sentences before she was stopped and questioned.
Got it. Got it.
All right.
But yeah, 5 minutes of back and forth.
Got it.
Let's stick with law enforcement here. Heather, new alarming data showing police use of force against Black people and Latinos is increasing.
Significantly, according to the coalition of reform groups that sued the city to force the city to enter into the consent decree. This coalition, which is led by the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, says the city is in violation of that consent decree because the uses of force by police officers is increasing. Now, if you ask CPD Superintendent Larry Snelling, he will say that the apparent increase of uses of force is actually because police officers are doing a better job reporting when they use force against members of the public. And it is not an actual sort of increase in the uses of force. However, CPD's own data is required to sort of break out the different kinds of uses of force and what the police department considers the most serious use of force. So gunshots, chokeholds, baton strikes to the head or the neck doubled in 2024 as compared with 2023.
Yeah.
And those uses of force leave a longer paper trail than lower level uses of force. So the coalition is very concerned about this. They say that 90% of the people who experience force at the hands of a police officer are Black, and that is essentially unchanged since 2019 when the consent decree began. And they have asked the federal judge to sort of oversee a crucial enforcement mechanism that could lead to additional requirements and additional steps that the police department must take.
We've got one more news story here involving Chicago police, Tom. CPD second in command, Yolanda Talley, is retiring. This is after 30 years on the force. Do we know what's behind her decision?
Not too long ago, she kind of got kneecapped by the superintendent, who spent a much longer time searching for a first deputy superintendent than Yolanda Talley spent in the role. And essentially, he stripped her of a lot of her key duties. So, you know, overseeing the bureaus like patrol, counterterrorism, that are really vital to the day-to-day operations of the police department. And so this comes in the wake of that. Mm-hmm. He gave a lot more power to John Hine, the chief of patrol. And so it's unclear what the organization of the, you know, the department is going to look like, whether Snelling will just kind of do away with having a first deputy superintendent, which in some cases, like in the past, the superintendent has just kind of been the face of the department.
Just kind of done
and
it all.
He goes and does the press conferences and he deals with the mayor and he does the weekly stat meeting. But Snelling is pretty deeply involved, as we saw during the DNC, where he was out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, front line.
Who needs a second in command?
Well, yeah, and I guess the argument could be is John Hine the second in command, right?
True.
I mean, he's over there, 35th in Michigan, with the superintendent every day. It's someone who manages a huge bulk of the police department.
And
being the patrol division, where most of the rank and file are.
Interesting. In other news, Carrie, Starbucks announced plans to close hundreds of stores across the country. What do we know about how that could impact us here locally?
We don't really know. Most companies don't release lists. You know, that's pretty hard to get. They keep that pretty close. But something like 900 employees could be losing their jobs or, quote unquote, reassigned. This happens, of course, I don't know if people remember, but for like the last 4 years, Starbucks workers have unionized and they still don't have a contract. In fact, I just got an alert or press release this week of like, I believe it might have been the Edgewater Glen area, like store. They were going to be outside protesting.
Right.
So we don't know which ones will be closed. I don't know. I don't know if you guys have noticed Starbucks, like, you know, they've sort of converted some to these mobile only
yes,
places to kind of just, and I don't know if that maybe requires fewer workers. I would think more because it's a constant backlog of people getting their coffee.
Yeah, so we're not certain. We're not sure how many are closing. We're not sure how many were unionized.
We don't know. Yeah.
There's and a lot we don't know here.
The CEO was really brought in as a big turnaround kind of CEO. He did that with Chipotle. And so I guess this is part of the turnaround for Starbucks.
All right. One more story before a pause, Carrie. Medical residents at Northwestern University, they've ratified a union agreement for the first time, and it follows University of Illinois Chicago residents getting their union contract back in 2023 and you Chicago residents unionizing in 2024. So thoughts here? I mean, this feels like a trend.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not new that doctors, especially residents who are sort of, you know, just starting out, have said we're overworked, we're tired. And what they say is that we need some of these protections in order to give better care to our patients, right?
And correction to me, that's Northwestern Hospital.
Northwestern Hospital, correct. Yeah. And so, and the other thing is that, you know, it's the starting salary is gone up maybe like 12,000 or something for residents who, you know, are entering the field with a ton of debt, you know, hundreds of thousands of debt. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, you know, that is necessary. And I think it'll just protect their hours so they're not so overworked. So that's a big win. And I think, like, we would all argue nobody wants a really tired doctor and overworked doctor.
Absolutely not.
Most of them are overworked. So this is meant to help the patient care.
The Trump administration announced it will be pulling about $8 million from Chicago public schools. Carrie, what's this about?
To be clear, about $5.6 million, which CPS says will create an $8 billion hole because of carryover funds.
Okay.
This has to do with CPS's Black Student Success Plan and also their, which is actually a state human rights policy of transgender students. So CPS has said, and this is not a surprise, they said we are not going to back down from those policies, which the U.S. Department of Education calls anti-DEI, or rather DEI, and that you know, they're discriminatory to other students. The Black Student Success Plan, this was launched by CPS to help boost graduation rates, the idea being to, you know, recruit and retain more Black educators, for example. The transgender policy being that students should be able to go to the restroom that adheres to their gender.
Yeah.
And so because of this, CPS is not changing either of these policies and won't stand down on it, the Trump administration.
They're like, okay, well, we're going to pull some funds.
Yeah, like $17 million over the next few years. I mean, look, the CPS's budget is what, 10-something billion.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, I mean, $5.6 million is $5.6 million.
I was just going to say, anything with a million on it, to me,
sure,
is still a lot of money.
Sure,
but
sure.
I get it.
So we'll see how that progresses.
And you also have another story, Carrie, about the University of Chicago, because it's facing budgetary issues and had to make some tough decisions.
Yeah, it's making staffing cuts because about 400 employees. But the other thing that's kind of caused a little bit of chatter is that they have paused admissions to their almost 20 graduate doctoral programs. And as we know, University of Chicago is, you know, such an intellectual place. It's one of the best universities in the country. And a lot of academics are saying, like, you know, this is the humanities at University of Chicago. You know, this is where fun goes to die. Ha ha ha. That's their unofficial motto, because it's such a haven for serious intellectuals. And the University of Chicago told me, look, yes, this is a temporary thing. We have not given up on our commitment to the humanities and languages and art history, et cetera. We are still, they say undergraduate enrollment is rising. This is not some sort of handing over the keys to AI. There mm-hmm. will continue to be professors. And, you know, and professors say they want to just be involved in these decisions yeah. going forward. They want a say of what their departments and their disciplines would look like. Then they say that's important because they're the ones interfacing with the students.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to this beautiful weather that we've been having. It's still al fresco season. Some people, some people are going to bring their, you know, their canine companions when they eat, maybe at an outdoor patio. But there is a Chicago alder who wants to be able, or wants you to be able, to dine inside with your dog. Give us the details, Heather.
Well, right now, city health code says that you cannot bring your dog, if they are not a service animal, to eat with you, like, tableside. And there are some restaurants who want their patrons to be able to do just that. And the businesses who have sort of urged Lincoln Park Alderman Timmy Knudsen to sort of push this through has said it will bring more business and it will make sort of their eateries more lively. On the other hand,
More lively. Sorry.
There's a reason why dogs are prohibited from where we eat, which is, you know, they shed, they drool. There are some people.
Mine, Heather.
There are some people who are deathly allergic to dogs and, you know, wouldn't be able to sort of exist in the same space. So this measure was introduced at Thursday's city council meeting. It is always a question as to whether these kind of measures that get perhaps a lot of coverage yeah. when they are introduced, whether they actually get a hearing and whether they actually become law. There are a lot of sort of moving parts in here. How would you enforce this? How would you ensure that dogs were not present where open food was being prepared?
There are so many questions
here. So many questions.
But where do you, Tom and Carrie, fall on bringing your furry friends into restaurants? Carrie, I'm not even looking at you because I think I already know
you think
where
you do,
you
but
stand.
No, honestly.
Well, you just tried to tell us your dog doesn't shed.
My dog is perfect, but Zuzu's perfect and she's blind, so she needs a little extra care.
Zuzu.
But believe it or not, I know, she's amazing, but believe it or not, I get it. We don't bring Zuzu inside to eat. And we do take her to patios. And honestly, that does drive a lot of our decisions in the summer of where to go. Because we want to, A, be outside, and B, we want to bring Zuzu because it's, you know, we have a lot of, we're part of a big dog community. So we bring our dogs a lot. But also the other, I am self-aware and understand also some people are afraid of dogs.
Right.
And so.
See, you're self-aware. Not every dog owner is.
Yeah. Most people are not.
They're so. Not. At all aware that just as a person who does not have a dog and has also got a fear.
Yeah.
I find most dog owners are just delusional about their pet.
They all think that their dog is a precious baby and could not do anybody any harm.
Like, no, that is not true. It's still an animal.
I don't believe in the comparison between babies and dogs, but I don't want to be at a bar next to a baby either, you know, and or a kid.
Babies are the worst.
Katie, no, babies are the best, but like, I don't want to.
There will be no baby slander here.
Drink
on WBEZ.
Next to one. So I understand why, but you know what? People break this rule constantly. You go to the Jewels and everybody carries their dog.
Dogs are everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Tom?
Well, if you think babies are bad, you should meet toddlers.
They're really unpleasant. Our engineer says, this just in, Heather hates babies.
Send your hate mail.
Talk shows at WBEZ.org.
My two kids are going to be very sad to hear this.
I'll forward them all to you over at WTTW.
I just think of that Seinfeld where Elaine gets bit by the dog. You're going out to brunch hungover and like the dog next to you just bites you in the leg. Fine on the patio. Dogs on the patio, have the bowl out there.
Not a problem.
Little treat bin, you know, that's cool with me, but nah.
Nope. Let's move from dogs to birds, Carrie, because it's peak migration season and you did a deep dive into bird collisions.
Chicago is the worst, bird advocates say, collisions. And
even with all the work we've done to put up the
screens, they say we haven't done enough work. The Chicago Collision Bird Monitors, they and other advocates, they they told me, Annette Price Prince told me this week that, you know, they collected like 200 carcasses, and that's like within a small area in the loop. I sadly do walk past dead birds, and especially on the beach too. And they want an ordinance that says, like, look, we're not trying to stifle development and architectural design, but something that would make the glass that, you know, something to maybe stunt some of the artificial light, and so that birds aren't, I mean, we're in the center of the country and it's peak migration season. Yeah. So there's millions coming through and they just don't understand the environment, because why would they? And they're trying to get south to their food source. So it's sad. I mean, and if you do see this, you are supposed to call them. I don't have the number in front of me, but it is on my story on Axios.com.
shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug. But you are supposed to call them, because there are some of these birds that are just injured and they can be saved.
Chicago Bird Collision Monitors?
Yes, correct.
They are at 773-988-1867.
All right.
Thanks, all right. As people are making plans for the weekend and the coming week, you covered an event, Carrie, that's meant as sort of an alternative to online dating. I want you to start, though, by telling us the name of this gathering.
The Feels. It's called The Feels.
The Feels.
Yes. And I realized all of us in here are married and not dating, I don't think. Maybe you are. I'm sorry. I don't want to get into your life. But
we are all booed up in the studio.
Yeah. So this is sort of this backlash in recent years that against, especially young people, against online dating. They are sick of trying to build connections through a computer, through a screen, and they long for sort of the physical element of it. This is, it's based on, you know, you do sort of sustained eye contact, which I don't know if you've ever tried to do that with you.
I revised my earlier statement. Baby's not the worst.
This is now worse than babies. Yes. Okay. So wait, what do you do?
I told my husband at our anniversary, we're looking at each other for 3 minutes.
So you sit and just stare at each other?
No, there's more than that. There's like meditation. There's also just these questions to tap into your vulnerability. Oh, it's meant to sort of cut through some of the superficiality and get to some of the bigger questions of how do you handle a transition in your life, et cetera. I think it's really cool. Like I said, I don't think I should go do it. I don't think that's fair. Nice to my husband, but
no,
I do
not
think
at all.
It is that young people, especially these digital natives, I've done several stories on this. They are like, I want to meet people like you older people did. I want to talk to people.
In
real life. And I think that's noble.
So then I guess the name is appropriate, right?
Yeah. Sexual feels, but like touch and, you know, and nothing consensual,
not,
of course.
Not the swipes.
Not the swipes.
Yeah, yes. No swipe right, swipe left.
And if you don't, and a friend of mine who said she was into it, she said, you know, look, if I don't meet anyone, fine. At least I had like meditation and I had this good experience. So.
Very interesting. Yeah. I'm also glad I'm no longer part of the scene. we got some local media news. Longtime Sun-Times columnist Mary Mitchell will join the ranks of Chicago newsroom greats whose bylines get to hang on the wall of the legendary Billy Goat Tavern. Yes, Mary.
Give it up for Mary.
Congratulations, Mary Mitchell. What a woman. What a gem. What a journalist. She is joining only two other women to get this honor, and she'll be the first woman of color to have her name hung on the wall. So again, congratulations to Mary Mitchell. Now, the months-long reality TV saga of the Leo High School Choir ended. They came in fourth place on America's Got Talent, and though they didn't win the $1 million prize, they did make Chicago incredibly proud. I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
Round of applause again.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Judge Simon Cowell's assessment, you know, he says they were, quote, inspired, or they, quote, inspired so many people.
Nice.
I think they did that, too.
I would love, I was listening to CityCast Chicago on the way here, and they were also talking about this. I would love, wouldn't this be great and heartwarming if you had... They said they were going to use $1 million for college scholarships.
Yes.
If somebody stepped up and was like, here's $1 million.
Oh, it's not too late. It's probably going to happen.
Okay.
I feel like it will.
Okay.
I feel like it will.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.